So a man was driving down the highway, and out in front of him from the woods darted. Hello? Here we go. Out in front of him darts a rabbit. The man driving the truck tries to swerve, but he runs over the rabbit and it makes him very, very sad. He stops, he pulls over to the side of the road, gets out, and he walks up to this rabbit that he's just run over, just flat and dead. And strewn across the highway is a shattered wicker basket and a bunch of eggs, just everywhere. And the man is devastated. I ran over the Easter Bunny. And distraught, he notices this other car's coming up, and they stop, and this woman gets out, and she asks what happened, and he tells her, and she says, oh, no worries at all. And she pulls a can of hairspray out of her purse and hands it to the man and says, here, use this. What do you want me to do with this? Well, spray it on. Okay, so he gets down, and he sprays the can of hairspray on the rabbit, and the rabbit pops up and grabs all the Easter eggs and hops away back into the woods. And as it's leaving, it stops and does this. And then it hops a little longer, and then it looks back and it does this. And it hops a little longer, and it looks back and it does this. And the man says, what kind of hairspray is this? And the woman says, well, just read the can. And he reads the can. It says, hairspray brings dead hair to life and provides continuous wave. I'll admit that was a late addition to the sermon manuscript. I brought some things with me today that I want to share with you from my life. These are some items that are very personal to me, okay? So some of you are very afraid. This is my blender. Like, wow, Mark, your blender is very personal to you. You have a very exciting life. I'm going to do this here so it doesn't come undone, hopefully. In 2010... I weighed about 75 pounds over what I weighed on my wedding day. I know that you might find that a little hard to believe, but that was the case. I wasn't a very healthy person at that point in my life. I was probably drinking. I'm trying not to exaggerate. I had 5 or 6 Dr. Peppers a day at 12 ounces. That's about 60 ounces. So that's almost half a gallon of Dr. Pepper each day. And by the way, if I'm describing your life right now, no shame, okay? I know, I get it. Dr. Pepper is glorious. I miss it. The last Dr. Pepper I had, this is going to tell you how much Dr. Pepper was a part of my life. August 23rd, 2010, at lunch with my coworkers, my youth ministry coworkers in Dallas, was my last Dr. Pepper. I miss it. The only thing that I might consider cheating since then was Jelly Belly makes a Dr. Pepper flavored jelly bean, and I've had a couple of those over the years since. But I've had no Dr. Pepper since August 23rd of 2010. Around that season of my life, I really wanted to get healthier. I had gone to see my doctor, and my doctor had told me that if I wasn't careful, I was probably headed down a road toward maybe developing diabetes or some other complications, and I just really wanted to try to avoid that if I could, so I decided I would make some changes. And one of the changes I made is I started drinking juice every morning. Okay, so I put a banana in, okay? How many of you like bananas? Raise your hand if you like bananas. I love bananas. Good. So I put a banana in there. And how many of you like strawberries? Blueberries, blackberries, berries in general, okay? So we put some berries in there. Looking pretty good so far, huh? I thought, you know, I want to be healthier. I want to live a healthier life. One of the things that was a problem at that point in my life was I had way too much sugar in my diet. And so I needed some things to add to this that didn't have sugar, even natural sugar. I needed something with a low glycemic load, I think is what they say. And so some vegetables, even carrots have a lot of sugar. So everybody says, hey, put carrots in your veggie juice because it makes it taste better. It sweetens it up. And I thought, I don't need more sugar. I need less sugar. And so I looked up what vegetables have the least amount of sugar. Okay. Cucumber. Here's a cucumber slice. How many of you like cucumber? Okay, you're still with me, all right? You would probably drink this, that's all right, okay. Here we go. Now we got some greens. This is, you can use kale or something more glamorous or interesting, but this is just romaine lettuce. And then here's the magic ingredient. This is where I'm going to lose most of you. Broccoli. Broccoli. How many of you did I just lose you at broccoli? I lost you at broccoli. You're thinking, I'm not going to drink that if it's got broccoli in it, okay? I add some water. And we are in business here. We have, I've been doing this every day. There have been a couple times we've been on vacation when I couldn't find a blender. But I've been doing this every day since 2010. And here we go. I've got some water leaking out the back. That'll be fun. Right on the electric cord, too. Got a little lettuce stuck there. All right. We are ready to go. Some of you think this is a joke. He's not really going to drink this. No, this is really what I drink every morning, every day. Sometimes I drink it more than once a day. I've got some extra cups up here. If you want to come up after service and try a little bit of this, it's, I guess in theory it's supposed to be green, but it ends up turning a dark brown, like where pink and green and brown all mix together in some sort of terrible combination. That's the color of this juice. And I'm just going to leave that right there, and we can pour some more after service if anybody wants to come up and try it. Do you want me to drink some just so you know that I'm not kidding? Okay, I'll drink some. That one's mine. I'll move that one down here. Don't drink that one. All right. I don't want to have that taste in my mouth the rest of the morning, so I'm going to rinse out. I don't enjoy that. Can I just tell you? I've been doing it for 7.5 years. I don't like it. It doesn't really taste that good. When I first started, I wasn't putting in any fruit. I wasn't putting any banana in there. And I found out from my doctor, I told him how much sugar I was eating. And he said, oh, yeah, humans can't survive on that little sugar. You need to add some. You could, like, what are you doing? I told him this thing I was making. And he said, oh, yeah, you could put a banana in there. I was like, yes. And the first day I did it, I put the banana in there. And all I could taste after that was the banana. And I was like, thank you, Lord, for bananas. But I do this, and again, I know some people are real uppity about like, oh, well, I drink green veggie juice in the morning. That's not what this is about. I do this because if I don't do this, I continue down this road for me of unhealth. I started doing this because I wanted to live a healthier life. This routine helps me do that. For me to get a better life from this process, something very specific has to happen. Many fruits and vegetables must lay down their lives in the smoothie, in the blender, for me to have life. Think about that. Everything that keeps you alive involves the death of that thing. Whatever is in your diet, whether you eat meat or if you're a vegetarian or whatever, the vegetables you eat have to be cut off of a tree or cut off of a plant. The stuff that you eat, it's all got to come from something that once was alive and then is no longer alive. All of them must die for you to live. Imagine if the banana refused to give up its life unless the banana dies, I don't live, right? I need the banana to die. If it doesn't, I don't live. And here's why. Because death is the engine of life. Death is always giving way to new life. Jesus says this in John chapter 12. Very truly, I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Jesus says this, and then he proceeds to lay down his own life on the cross for the sake of the world. Jesus lives out what he says in this verse in John chapter 12. He lays down his life. He was crushed so that we may have life, because death is the engine of life. Think about this from a scientific standpoint. In your body right now, there are millions and millions and millions and millions of cells, right, that make up your body. And right now, this very second, thousands and thousands and thousands of those cells just died. And thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of other cells got their life and took their place. And then again, and then again. So right now, in your body, we have this process of things inside of you dying so that other parts of you may live. Death and life. Death is the engine of life. Think about fertilizer and compost. What is it? Well, it's gross, right? It's death. It's decomposition. It's where you throw a bunch of stuff together and it mixes together until it becomes this disgusting, smelly, putrid, dying, gross, yucky stuff. But then what happens when you put that stuff on other stuff is that it helps the other stuff grow and live and be more fruitful and productive. Death is the engine of life. Think about the seasons. In the springtime, everything is new and there's new flowers and all the animals, to quote the Disney movie, become Twitterpated, right? And there's new life everywhere around. And then summer comes and everything's green and good and warm. And then fall comes and then the leaves begin to fall. Things begin to die. Things begin to change colors. And then it gives way to winter, where everything is dead and dormant and there is very little life to be seen. Until what happens? Spring comes again. There's some kind of gloomy folks out there. I'm sort of a gloomy kind of personality internally, and I would love for it to just be winter all the time. I'd be great with that. Gloomy, cloudy, foggy, depressing. I wake up in the morning, if there's fog, if it's cloudy, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a good day. I really do feel that. I'm not just saying, I really feel that way. And sometimes when spring starts to emerge, I'm like, well, now it's going to get warm and I'm going to sweat. And there's going to be pollen and allergies. Couldn't everything just stay dead forever? But there it is. It just keeps coming. You can't stop it, right? It doesn't matter who's in office or who won the World Series or who won or lost the SEC championship. It doesn't matter if the global warming or climate change, if you believe in it or not. None of that really can stop the fact that when winter ends, spring comes. It's going to happen, because that's what always happens, because it's built into the very fabric of the way all things have been made. This death giving way to new life, because death is the engine of life. It's built into the fabric of everything. This mystery that Jesus makes known to us is that real life springs forth out of death. And that brings us to our parable of the day. We've been in this series of parables called New Seeds. And today I want us to look at one of the shortest parables that Jesus tells. It's in Matthew chapter 13, verse 31, if you want to turn there. It'll be on the screen. Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds come and perch in its branches. It's always important to read contextually. If you look around this parable in Matthew chapter 13, you'll find some very familiar territory from this series that we've been in. This is verse 31 and 32. If you go to verse 33, you find that Jesus says, the kingdom is also like a woman who takes yeast and kneads it into a batch of dough, into 3 measures, 60 pounds of flour, until it's worked its way all the way through. If you go before this parable, you find that Jesus tells a parable about a farmer who goes out and scatters his seed, and some falls on good soil and some falls on bad soil, but yet every day the sower goes out and scatters the seed over and over and over again until new things, new life emerges. Jesus has this fixation on seeds and on growth and on new life, and he tells this story, this parable about this mustard seed. The thing about a mustard seed is that it's technically not the smallest seed out there. There are a few that are small, but it would have been very familiar to the people of his day. If you've ever held a mustard seed, I mean, you can go to the store and buy a little, go to the spice section, you can find mustard seeds. They're not very large. The mustard seeds in the Galilee region where Jesus was from are probably referring to a black mustard seed. And they are, in fact, unusually small. One seed weighs approximately 1 milligram and has a diameter of 0.9 to 1.6 millimeters. If you're not very good with millimeters to inches or whatever, I'll convert this for you. 1.6 millimeters and 1 milligram in weight is very, very small. It's very small. It's certainly not expected that anything large can come from this tiny seed. And yet, the seed, the size of a pinhead, when buried in the ground, it grows very rapidly into an annual bush with branches like those of a tree. The average height of a mustard plant in that region is probably around 5 feet near the Sea of Galilee. And near the sea, it's been known to grow as high as 9 or 10 feet. Again, if you're thinking about a tree, you think, well, 9, 10 feet, that's really not that big of a plant. In fact, the people of Jesus' day may have actually really thought that, because there were passages in the Old Testament where God's people were compared to a cedar of Lebanon. The temple was made of cedars of Lebanon. These were these huge, gigantic, majestic trees, beautiful wood. And the people of Israel had this image of themselves that they were God's tree in the world, that they were God's towering light above all other nations. They were his chosen people to carry his promise and his good news into the world. And so they loved this idea that they were this giant tree, this giant majestic cedar tree. And Jesus tells a parable about a bush that, while it is big for a bush, 9, 10 feet tall, that's pretty big, it wasn't exactly what they had in mind. But perhaps what Jesus wants them to hear is that something so large can come from something so small. And maybe their view of God and of the kingdom and of who they were supposed to be was not the same vision that God had for the world. The other thing about mustard is not only that it grows from a tiny seed into a very large plant, even big enough for some birds to come and perch in. That's not the only thing that I want you to know about it. The other thing is that it's very prolific. It will spread. Mustard can grow like a wild bush, the same way that a weed can grow wildly through a garden. It would have been familiar to Jesus' listeners. Jews often valued order and strict rules about how to keep a tidy garden. In fact, there were rules in the law about not planting more than one seed in a field. Now, Jesus is talking about a garden, so does he intend that meaning to come through or not? We don't really know. But there was this sense that if you were going to plant mustard in your garden, you better be ready for you to have a garden full of mustard, because it was very prolific. Wherever you planted, it would spread. It was very difficult to contain. It was notorious for invading well-trimmed veggies and other plants and taking over the entire garden, kind of like how yeast works its way through dough. Those who heard this comparison that the kingdom of God is like mustard may have laughed. kingdom of God like this shrub, this weed that takes over a garden. But what Jesus has in mind is not a giant, majestic tree. What Jesus has in mind for how God's kingdom will spread through the world is not a frontal attack on the empires of this world. Shane Claiborne says, his revolution is a subtle contagion. One little life, one hospitality house at a time. Isn't it interesting that Saul of Tarsus went door to door trying to tear up the contagion like it was a weed? But the harder people tried to eradicate it, the faster it spread. Legend was when the Persian king Darius invaded Greece. He came face to face in battle with the armies of Alexander the Great. Darius sent Alexander a huge bag of sesame seeds as a taunt, as if to say, this bag represents my numerous army, much larger than yours. And it was. Well, Alexander sent back in return a message of his own, a small bag with mustard seeds in it, with the message, you may be many, but we are powerful, and we can handle you. And they did. Mustard, though small, is surprising in its power to take everything around it over. The third thing about mustard is that for you to really use it, it's got to be crushed. Mustard releases its potency when it's smashed, when it's crushed, when it's ground up. And there Jesus goes again, Gerard Loefink says, spinning power on its head again. His power was not in crushing the world, but in being crushed, triumphing over the empire's sword with his cross. Mustard must be crushed, ground, broken for its power to be released. John's gospel describes Jesus' death and resurrection as a seed that is broken, which we've already read this morning. Unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. When mustard is crushed, its power is released. There's a saying, in the blood of the martyrs lies the seed of the church. When our lives are crushed, when we lay them down like a mustard seed, when our lives fall to the ground and are buried and died, when that happens, that seed has the power to create new life in the world. If you start at the beginning of Matthew chapter 13 and you read all the way through the chapter, and you imagine this new kind of world that Jesus envisions, and you get to this verse about this mustard seed and the next story about the yeast, and you recognize that Jesus is talking about this mystery that God has been sowing since the creation of the world. That what is this mystery that we've talked about? What is this yeast that's working its way all through the dough? What is this kingdom of God really about? What's going on here? What is it that Jesus is really after? And the mystery is this. It's been there from the beginning in nature, in our bodies, in our cells, in the way that we stay alive when we eat things that have given up their lives. The mystery of the kingdom of God is death is the engine of life. Death and resurrection. What overcomes the world and ushers in new creation? Death and resurrection. What overcomes the powers of evil in the world? Death and resurrection. Just like my brown smoothie over here, death and new life. And so, I want to talk about you for a second. Are you living out, have you embraced this kingdom way of Jesus? This death and resurrection mystery. Has that yeast started to work its way into the dough of your life as it works its way all throughout the batch? Or are you hanging on to your own life so that you can save it? Like you can have the best life possible by grasping tenaciously to your own life. Jesus says that those who want to save their life will lose it, but those who are willing to lose their life will save it. He says, unless you're willing to take up your cross, unless a seed is willing to fall to the ground and die, it remains only a single seed. If your story is that at the end, everybody looks and talks about what a magnificent seed you are, then what an unfortunate story. If our story is we just want to be the best and the greatest and the shiniest and the most impressive seeds of all, if we hold on to our life and our life just is about looking like a really, really impressive seed and that's what we're about, then are we really alive? Think about the people who've made the greatest impact on you. Who are they? They're people who, by the way they lived their lives and the way that they loved you and the way that they cared about you, their life demonstrated over and over a death, a laying down of themselves, a laying down of their agenda, of what they wanted so that you could be built up. A parent, a coach, a mentor, a teacher, a boss, a neighbor, a friend, somebody in your life that made all the difference because they were living out death and resurrection. They were living out the kingdom narrative that death is the engine of life. If you really want to live, if you really, really want to live, then you got to embrace the way of the cross, the mystery of the kingdom, the way of Jesus. You must become a death-making way for resurrection kind of person in a thousand little ways. Do you know why forgiveness is so hard? Because it feels like you're going to die. Doesn't it? That moment when your heart is first pricked in the ground of a hard, unforgiving heart first starts to crack and give way, and the seed of the gospel first starts to find its way in there, and for the first time you consider, maybe I could bring myself to forgive that person. And then immediately what happens is that your life kicks, your survival instinct kicks back into gear, and you say, no, I'm not going to do that, and you wrestle back and forth, and the reason is because the part that wants to stay alive, the survival instinct in you says, I can't do that, I don't want to do that, it would feel like death to do that, it would feel like dying to forgive this person. And so the question is are you ready? Are you wanting to live a real life, a resurrection life? Are you wanting to experience new life in Jesus? Forgiveness is like death. And if we don't die, then we don't really live. Generosity, it's like death. You're giving something away, things hard-earned things that you've worked for, that are yours, that you have a right to, and yet when we're generous, we hand those things over. We live life with open hands. It can feel like dying to give up our privileges. It can feel like dying to give up our possessions, our things that make us comfortable. But then when we see the life that it gives to others, we recognize that in that too is this mystery of death being the engine of life. So today, on this Easter Sunday, I just want to ask you how you might need to die with Christ today. Paul says in Galatians 2 that I've been crucified with Christ, and now I no longer live, but it's Christ that lives within me. And the life that I now live, I live by faith in the one who gave himself for me. So how do you need to die today to live? If you were to wake up a year from now, or 7.5 years from now, and every day you were to die a little bit to yourself, and I'm telling you, there's some mornings when I wake up and I want to eat pizza for breakfast. And I'm putting this stuff in this blender, and I'm thinking, seriously, I'm going to do this again? I would rather die than drink this stuff. I feel that way somewhere. Is it a dramatic? Yes, but you know me. You know how I like to be a little dramatic. What would it look like if today you were honest about how you need to die? Maybe it's in some little way to give up your comfort, your life, so that greater life might emerge. Our survival instincts tell us that we shouldn't do that, that we should hang on, we should hold on tight, we should just keep tenaciously clawing our way toward more and more. We should grasp life harder. That if we let go, we'll die. And dying isn't fun. But what we celebrate today is that death is not the end of the process. It's only the beginning of the process. What we celebrate today is that although Jesus died, he's no longer dead. The tomb is empty. What we celebrate today is that although he was buried, he is now risen. That although he died and went down into the ground as a seed, he has raised and now has created many, 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 many seeds. Seeds that are designed, whose very DNA and genetic structure is designed to also die, to create more seeds, to give up your life, that new life might emerge, both for yourself and for others. The tomb is empty. Death is only the beginning, but it is the doorway to real life. And so are you willing to follow Jesus to the cross and into the tomb? Because if you're unwilling to do that, then there's really no part in what happens next. Jesus says, this is how it works. Look at the seasons. Look at the cells in your body. Look at the food that you eat. This is just how it works. Death and life, death and life, death and life, death and resurrection. And today we celebrate resurrection. Because as we look around us, the world has plenty of examples, plenty of testimony, plenty of headlines where death seems to have the final say. And today we proclaim loudly and in faith that death not only doesn't get the final word, but it's only the beginning, because Jesus Christ has risen from the dead, and he is risen indeed. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast through dough. The kingdom of heaven is like a farmer that goes out to sow its seed. And unless that seed falls to the ground and dies, it remains a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Let those who have ears to hear the good news of God. As we stand and sing this song together, I want to invite you to consider what it is that God has done in you and what God is doing in your story. And I want to invite you to consider in the days to come, after the Easter baskets and the Sunday lunches are done, and after everything's cleaned up and you go back to work and or school in the days to come, that you ask this question: what do I need to do to die so that I can really, really live? What do I need to do to die so that others around me can truly, truly live? What is death and resurrection, death as the engine of life in my life, in my story? What does that look like? What do I need to do? What small decisions do I need to start making today that years from now, decades from now, lead to greater and ever more increasing life? What do I need to do? What do you need to do? Maybe you want to take a small step this morning and ask for prayer. Maybe you want to take a big step this morning and join Jesus in death in the waters of baptism and be raised to walk in a new life with the gift of his Spirit through baptism and through confession of faith. If you have a need, our elders are going to be in the aisles and at the front and the back, and I want to invite you to find one of them, express your need to them while we stand and sing this song. Let's sing together.